Welcome to the Retzel Health Law Hotspot. Health Law Hotspot is a podcast for physicians and health professionals that covers the legal issues and trends that affect the healthcare industry.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Health Law Hotspot. I'm Erica Adler, shareholder at Retzel & Andrus and leader of the Health Law practice. Today, we're very excited to have back as a guest, Dr. Doug McKinley. And Doug has invested his time in coaching and developing hundreds of leaders and senior teams nationally. We previously had Doug on to talk about leadership and how physicians could switch from being clinicians to leaders. Today, we're going to be talking about a slightly different topic, which is physician conflict and how to resolve that. And I guess the same skills would apply outside the practice setting as well. Dr. McKinley serves companies as an independent leadership pathfinding consultant. He holds a doctorate degree in clinical psychology. He's a master certified coach from the International Coach Federation and the author of 2 books and numerous training manuals and articles on leadership development. But what he's also really interested in is what we call productive conflict. Mm-hmm. So why don't we just jump right in, and you can start off by telling us, what is productive conflict? And why is it important for us to talk about?
I'm still looking for it. I'm on a quest. I think productive conflict is it's a conceptual mindset of thinking about conflict as a way of increasing commitment and alignment. Most people, if I said to you, Erica, that tell me what, if you answer this question, conflict is, what would be your first response? Conflict is what?
Fight, dispute, argument.
Yeah, so the image, the mindset we have about conflict is if it's a negative. And so productive conflict is actually deciding that conflict is something that will actually produce alignment and forward action. I literally used to think I was a conflict coward. And so I reprogrammed my mind, and I read many, many books, probably 50 books on conflict, and got some coaching myself. And now I fundamentally believe that without conflict, I won't get to the kind of alignment with others, collaboration that I want. So I believe conflict is the doorway to collaboration. And so I'm like, let's have conflict. Let's go.
All right. We talk about conflict, though, it's usually very dreaded experience, no matter who you are. Why is it that we dread it so much if it can be something positive?
Because our mindset is that, well, first of all, more than likely, a lot of our experiences at home, in school, have been negative. And I think it's fundamentally because, at least in the Western society, we've always viewed it as negative. It's something that's hurtful and it's scary and dreaded. So I think the biggest challenge to it is we just don't think about it in the way that it could be positive. So literally just introducing the idea of productive conflict was given to me by Patrick Lencioni, who's a famous author of The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team. It's just a switch. We're just saying, no, this is really needed. We have to, you and I, Erica, have difference of opinions. And sometimes it comes with strong emotion, right? And so we have different opinions and we feel strongly about it. Just look what's happened across the country around vaccines recently. I mean, I'm having, I don't know if I'd say productive conflict with my own family members, right? We're having debates about should I not, what's the pros and cons, and it more often than not leads to discouragement, right, and a feeling of defeat. So I think it's our mindset and our historical experience with conflict.
I think that's really interesting, and definitely when you mention emotion, I think that's really key, because a lot of people just feel strongly emotionally about what they're arguing, and if they could take the emotion out of it and just look at the facts and circumstances, it might be easier to resolve conflict. In the healthcare setting, though, where, for example, you have physicians who are fighting about something, maybe it's their compensation formula, maybe it is how much call somebody needs to take, and they feel very strongly for their personal reasons, I'm not getting paid enough, or you're getting paid too much, or I need more free time, et cetera. Some of it is very factual. So it's not just an opinion, like maybe the vaccine situation might be a little bit more personal opinion. How do we work towards separating the emotion so that we can talk about the conflict itself?
Yeah, great question. I think physicians are interesting. You take them into I've been set on tumor boards where they've postmortems where they can fight with each other openly and non-emotionally about treatment strategy and why'd you do this or not do that and walk out friends. And it's so fascinating. So the skill is there, but when you come into things that you're talking about that are more personal, like compensation or days off or, you know, how much clinic time I have versus you, you know, now all of a sudden it's like they forgot their brain. There's that skill set goes out the door and it's personal.
Right.
So I think first and foremost, we need to understand that there is a skill set for proper conflict management. I don't like the word management, conflict mastery, to show up well. And a lot of it has to do with, I hate to say this, it has to do with just you to believing that the person I'm in conflict with has the right to their perspective. And I see a lot of shame and a lot of, unfortunate biases that are being placed on each other, that it's almost like, you know, if you don't agree with me, you're kind of not as smart as me. I could say that in a more hurtful way, but that is the problem is why can't I just agree that, Erica, you have the right to your opinion, I have the right to mine, and I can feel strongly about it.
I agree with you. And I think some of it also is personality, that if you've always won conflicts in a certain way and it's worked for you, that you just keep doing it that way, whether it's harassing or barraging somebody because you just eventually win. I know we're talking about medicine here, but even in the legal field, you know, different types of lawyers with different kinds of skill sets. So when I'm negotiating a contract with a contract lawyer, we very much have much more of a win-win. I know I'm going to get some things I want. I know I'm not going to get other things, but at the end of the day, we're going to have a contract, right? But if you talk with other types of lawyers, like litigators, for example, their mindset is very different, where if they don't win, they've lost. And they're extremely, not all, but some, aggressive and assertive. And to somebody like me, where I'm more used to negotiating a win-win situation, it can be, you know, you can be very taken aback by that approach. So, you know, how do we take people also with very different styles of communicating and have them put that aside to really focus on, you know, we each have a right to have our opinion on this point. So, you know, it's not necessarily emotion, it's more style, I would say.
Yeah. Great question. I think we need to think about this. We don't lead from our personality. Our personality is just the way we express our values. And so a lot of it has to do with enacting and activating our values. If I value another human's perspective, my personality is not going to want to dominate you because I value you. So we have to be self-aware enough to know that and let our values lead, not our personality and our character. I think it's some of it is your role. I think litigators, you would argue, right, that they're in that position because they have this giftedness of the art of persuasion, right? They have language skills that some of us on the other side feel like is manipulative, but if they're really good, that's why they went into litigation. And I want them to play to their strengths. It's just after the battle, that whole thing where you said there's winners and losers, that's the wrong paradigm.
Right.
Not winners and losers. There's putting it all out in the court, no pun intended, and letting due process make the decision and then detaching. That's where people, I think, can't do. If I lost, that means they take it about their identity rather than the role they're playing.
Right.
So my identity is now being crushed. No, it's not. You didn't win that one. You did a good job. You did your job, but you didn't win.
Well, how do we help leaders then resolve this conflict? How do they become more effective personally in being able to help their colleagues or in their leadership role, help physicians around them address conflict?
Yeah, it's going to sound a lot like when we talked about, you know, moving from clinician to leader. I think it's self-awareness to begin with, that that we don't have to win all battles, that it's about showing up in the best possible way, and representing our truth in a way, whatever it is that we feel convicted about, is representing that in a way that is, that honors the expression that we need or the constituents that we support. And then detaching. I mean, I think we need to learn the art of detachment. We have to understand that, first of all, there are some conflicts that are never going away. I call them tensions. They're just some tensions between the sales team and the operations team, between the underwriters and the people that are writing loans. In physicians, it's, you know, we got researchers and then we got clinicians. So some tensions, they make us better if we stay in the tension. Removing the conflict would actually be detrimental to a healthy organization. So it just starts with that. I think if you're a person, let's say you're saying, I'm in conflict with somebody at work right now, I would recommend finding an arbiter, you know, somebody that can be an ombudsman for the process. Often it's people like you, you know, in the practice that has more of that skill set of win-win. You're already trained in it. So I don't know. Right. I think office administrators play that role a lot. I think sometimes surprising people show up.
So, and you're right. I absolutely work with a lot of doctors that fight a lot. So when you work with physicians in conflict, though, what are some of the steps that help them have a more productive conflict mediation? I think sometimes having a calm voice in letting each side speak, and sometimes just having strangers present, can actually have, you know, serve as a check on behavior, I think. But what do you recommend when you're working with physicians who are in conflict with each other?
So I always lead with empathy training. Most people, I just don't think you're going to have productive conflict if you don't have the skill of empathy in play. And I just read a book called Think Again by Adam Grant, who he was hired to do a study. I don't know where you're located. Are you here in Chicago? I forget.
I'm in Chicago. Yep.
Yeah. This is a study between New York Yankee fans, the baseball team, mm-hmm. and Boston Red Sox fans. And the study was, how do we mediate the conflict of the two fan types? Cause they're just, it's a hostile relationship, probably very similar to Cubs and Sox here in Chicago. And his research, what he found, it's actually a beautifully written chapter in the book, but his research found that they tried to start with common ground, like, oh, you both love baseball. And that wasn't enough, because apparently, well, if you're a baseball fan, why would you support the Red Sox? That would make you inferior. But right. What they found is, until they got to this variable, they said, what if you're a New York Yankees fan, what if you grew up in Boston? What team do you think you would support? And that's where they got the mindset shift. They go, oh, I'd probably be a Red Sox fan. And that's where, that's the only way he could get through his study, these fans to support each other. And I think the same thing with docs. Common ground, the patient is not enough common ground. I thought that's what it would be when I first started my work, Eric, because I just, oh, let's all serve the patient. Well, there's a lot of clinical variability, they call it, in how you treat a patient. So that's what their controversy is often about. And so you've got to increase the skill of empathy, lead with empathy, and let each other see it from their perspective. And sometimes it's got to be as general as, if you were there when the first patient just came in, what would you have done? And so it's leading with empathy, finding that place to where we could be human with each other and not shame or I call it doofusing each other, giving each other, you know, a negative evaluation. So it takes a lot of work, to be honest. It's very, my biggest challenge, to be the biggest constraint I have, is people don't believe that it'll get better. You've probably done mergers and acquisitions, and they would rather leave than actually have the uncomfortable conversations. And I think my personal conviction is nobody has the uncomfortable conversations. And if they would, they would find a lot more alignment with their colleagues.
I think you're absolutely right. And usually they have more in common, and it would hurt them to not work out the issue or the deal. Maybe they lose their contract or their group falls apart or whatever may happen, but they still can't bring themselves to find a resolution, which is kind of surprising when you're looking at it from the outside. Do you also find that they're, you know, I find sometimes if you could just get the doctors together, they could work it out. What makes me frustrated sometimes are lawyers interfering and making things a little more hostile and aggressive than they need to be. Spouses, I gotta say, spouses are very problematic, you know, with their coaching of their, you know, their husband or wife. They can make a situation unresolvable. Do you find that those outside players can be the reason that your attempts to resolve a conflict fall apart as well?
Yeah, the short answer is yes. Yep. A lot of what I learned was from marriage counseling, right? So you have aunts and uncles and in-laws and there's another one. Why would 50% of our marriages end in divorce when it clearly, you know, most of the time isn't better for everybody? It actually detracts from everybody. It's because we just don't have the skill. We just don't know how to be vulnerable around strong emotion and difference of opinion. So yeah, I think even the staff, Erica, sometimes the chief nurse or the, you know, they pick sides. It becomes a Hatfield and McCoys, and suddenly you associate with a tribe, and now you're like the Yankees and Boston fans. You hate each other when you don't even know why.
I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, there's a bias, a tribe bias. I forget what it's called, where you actually pick a tribe because you feel more comfortable. Right. I think that's why a lot of people pick Republican or Democrat, because they don't understand what's going on. They just pick a side and feel.
They can't stay neutral because maybe then they're at risk as well. Sometimes.
Right.
But, you know, one last question I kind of want to ask is, do you think it's better for people to, you know, when we talk about helping doctors resolve their conflicts, whether in the hospital setting or in private practice, is it better to kind of get them in the room talking? I find a lot of communication these days is texting and emailing, and people are less afraid to say things when they're behind their keyboard, I think, you know. But does that help or hinder our effects, you know, how conflicts can be resolved, or our hope and intent to help people resolve a conflict? Would you rather just say, look, stop emailing each other, stop texting, let's get in a room and talk? Or do you feel that helps the process?
Well, I'm not sure which way you're asking that. I think it's a lot harder to mistreat people when you're in a room with them. Yes.
Right.
It's easy to just shoot an email or text or even Zoom. I find people are a little more curt and dramatic on Zoom than they are in person. So my bias, I just got invited, right, was it around January, February, to come and mediate a conflict with a physician group. And I said I wouldn't do it unless I could, you know, do it live. And so once we were all vaccinated, they had me come out in March and we did it live for that same reason. I just, the kind of conflict they were having, I just didn't feel confident I could move the dial. And I'm not moving the dial very far anyway. It's very difficult. Very bright. We get a room with very bright people with lots of skills, verbal skills. It's a tough thing to find that common ground and empathy.
I completely see it, especially where none of them are willing to bend. If you could have anybody just look at their position a slightly different way, a slight change can help change the dynamics.
5%. Right? I say 5%. You're absolutely right. Just give me 5%. Give them 5%.
Right.
You know, the best thing that helped me is in high school, I was forced into joining the debate team because one of my teachers, bent my shoulder or bent my arm and talked me into it. It was the best thing I ever did, is to learn how to debate on a side of a topic that I didn't agree with.
Right.
And that's that empathy. That's that ability to use your beautiful brain to think objectively about, be a scientist about it.
Right. I absolutely agree. And I think, you know, there's so many physicians that have tremendous groups or organizations that, you know, things fall apart because of conflict. And if just one person could, you know, observe, be conscious of how they handle conflict, maybe they're overreactive, over emotional, they don't let the other person talk or think, they shoot off insensitive, rude emails and then expect people to ignore them when they all come together in the room, right? To me, those are the kind of experiences that make it really hard to help clinicians come together and resolve disputes. As a parting piece of advice, you know, what are your what are your final thoughts on how we can best support physicians to resolve conflicts or to have what you call productive conflict?
I would just like to say you have to have hope, believe it can be resolved. It can. I see it happen. I see it happen more often than not when people engage, when they actually move into the uncomfortable conversation vulnerably, meaning they don't come with guns and swords. They come setting their armor down and just dialoguing. You got to believe in the possibility that the conversation can make forward progress. And until you do, you're going to, all your biases and all your filters, all your thinking is going to probably prevent you from, you'll self-sabotage in many ways. So I would like to say productive conflict is possible. It's happening all the time. And we gotta all learn how to get better at it and find our way into those kind of conversations. It's amazing. I was a conflict coward. I really was. And I no longer fear it. I actually look forward to it. Let's debate. Yeah.
And I guess another thing is that if you know you can't do it alone, that there is help out there. I mean, right. You offer those kinds of services, and I would never even think to bring in somebody from the outside who has those skills to be able to assist. You know, sometimes it's more than your office manager or your lawyer or your accountant can offer, and you really do need somebody with those outside skills. So for those of you listening, you know, Dr. McKinley is that kind of person, and certainly there are
there's many of us, yeah.
Right, where you can't do it yourself, there's help there on how to become better colleagues to each other, how to communicate better, and how to resolve conflict. So thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it. I find this to be a fascinating topic. We thank everybody out there for joining us on the Health Law Hotspot. You can see our other podcasts and find out more about Retzel and Andrus at ralaw.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Thanks.
The Retzel Health Law Hotspot is made available by the firm and its attorneys for educational purposes and to provide general information, not to provide specific legal advice. Use of the Retzel Health Law Hotspot does not create an attorney-client relationship between you and the firm or any of its attorneys. The Retzel Health Law Hotspot should not be used as a substitute for competent legal advice, and you should contact an attorney in your state about any legal needs or questions you may have.